Glad you're with us. Golic and Wingo, ESPN Radio, ESPN 2, presented by Progressive Insurance. All phone guests, as you know, join us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Mike Golic, Mike Golic Jr., Trey Wingo here with you, and you are witnessing, if you're watching on television, Senior just being licked to death by one of the pugs.
Harry is saying good morning, and I'm going to let Harry say good morning because I love my little puppy dog.
Yeah, that's become one of the major developments of the home studio is the dogs have asserted their dominance in this situation.
They have. They like to be show dogs, but they also like to say, you know what? Oh, good. He's saying good morning to his dad. Good morning. Good morning, Harry.
I mean, you can literally hear it.
Yes, I was going to say, this is like
everyone
ASMR.
Everyone be quiet for a second. That's what's going on. Just so you know. I mean,
That was such clear slobber.
Boy, Harold.
That was quite the tongue lasher.
Honestly, it's the best take on this show in weeks,
yeah,
too.
You're not kidding. You're not kidding.
That was
that's a good boy.
That was something.
That was incredible.
Yeah.
So Major League Baseball.
Yeah.
I need a cigarette. Yeah.
Whoa. Baby.
So, back to that.
Yeah. You guys are throwing a little bit now, aren't you?
I'm good, man. Yeah. We're moving forward.
Listen, we've all been a little knocked off. You know what? Let's put it this way. Yesterday during the show, we got news that all kind of was a gut punch to us and knocked us off a little bit. I will much rather take this version of being knocked off course, not being sure how to accurately transition away from a pug cleaning my father's face.
Yep.
Yeah,
because we all love dogs.
What?
Oh no!
Come on,
no.
Cliff.
You're sick.
No.
Jeez. The porn bed music.
Awful.
For a no, I can't. Awful. I can't do this. Golic and Wingo here on ESPN Radio, ESPN News. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests join us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. We're going to talk to Woj here in just a minute. Get an update from inside the NBA bubble because. Inside the bubble, they've got to be looking at us all in the outside world like the rest of the countries on Earth have been looking at us like, oh my God, what the hell is going on over there?
That is absolutely correct. And we're trying to figure out why baseball goes forward. Again, we're still waiting the results of the test from the Phillies who played the Marlins on Sunday.
Right.
When they had, at that point, 4 players test positive, and now it turns out they had 11 players test positive. And obviously the Phillies game with the Yankees was canceled. The next couple of games for the Marlins has been canceled as they're trying to get back the test from them and find out if they can go back to playing Major League Baseball with the Marlins with the way the virus has gone through that team and what, if any, of the transmission might have been passed on to the Phillies by having them be on the same field at the same time with the Marlins on Sunday. So Rob Manfred, the commissioner of Major League Baseball, did an extensive interview on the MLB Network with Tom Verducci, and one of the things that he talked about was David Price. David Price was the Dodgers pitcher who opted out of coming back and playing this year, opting out of $11 million. But again, he has many more years left on a contract that pays
guaranteed.
Guaranteed fully, more than that 11. And he tweeted, now we really get to see if Major League Baseball is going to put player health first. Remember when Manfred said players' health was paramount? Part of the reason I'm at home right now is because players' health wasn't being put first. I can see that hasn't changed. Well, Commissioner Manfred was asked about that by Tom Verducci, and this is what he had to say.
I disagree with David's comments. I think both for the MLBPA and for us, the health issue was the one that had to be resolved. It was the most important one to all of us. In terms of the activities that have happened in the last few days, as I said, you know, we followed the protocols to a T. We went beyond those protocols in the sense that we canceled games 2 for the Marlins so far. We're open to having to cancel additional games if we feel it's necessary to keep our players safe.
So originally the response from Rob Manfred was, the protocols were built to allow us to play through these positives. We believe the protocols are adequate to keep our players safe. Then you're talking about going beyond the protocols. The whole point of this is not to shame Rob Manfred for going up here. And I know that's going to be a very easy thing to do today because leadership is going to come under fire during these processes. But it is to say, you just admitted our own processes weren't enough. We did something that was outside of that meaning. You should be willing to adjust this going forward because I think there are a couple of clear areas where you need to look at and address what's happening.
Well, that's exactly right. And that's what I would imagine they're honing in on is where do you focus on this? Because listen, the semantics of saying we went above and beyond our protocols and canceled games or postponed games. Well, that should have been part of the protocol.
Correct.
At what part of the protocol do games become postponed? I mean, that shouldn't be above and beyond. That should be in your 113 pages or whatever it was involved in that. But, you know, baseball's not going to a bubble, all right? Baseball is going to continue to try and play. So instead of doing the what-if game, let's actually look, push forward and say, okay, where did they fail here? Because that's what we have to look at. And we would have to ask, did they fail? And if they failed somewhere, where did they fail? Did they fail the number of positive tests that so many tested positive? Or is that the pandemic? As we said, the pandemic is going to decide what happens in our world of sports, right? So is this just the pandemic? Are the players at fault? Because we even noticed the announcers and analysts starting to notice that there was less social distancing, that there was more high fives, that there was more masks being pulled down. Does that have something to do with it? Because we all talked about the responsibility of the players in this, whether you're inside the bubble or out, you have responsibilities. Then maybe the biggest one, your protocols that you have, but you want to play the game. So where does that skew what you think of it? You have four players test positive over a couple of days, and then you decide to still play the game. And you say, well, our guidelines, we followed our protocols, we followed our guidelines that said those players weren't in direct contact with other people. They were had their social distancing. So through our contact analysis here, we don't think anybody else was at risk. Obviously not true because more people tested positive. So was that the protocol or the guidelines just flat out not working, or you wanting to play the game so badly that you were willing to kind of say, yeah, we think they followed the guidelines enough to where we can still play this game.
Confirmation bias. Looking yes. for things that back yeah. what I already think. Because
something yeah. didn't work there. And then everybody's saying, well, let's wait and see how many Phillies test positive. Because as somebody mentioned, listen, Juan Soto tested positive, didn't play an opening day. We were all like, wow, one of their best players. Well, it seems nobody else had tested positive out of that with one player who was positive. So what do we wait and see if none of the Phillies test positive? Do we say, A, we dodged a bullet, B, the protocols and guidelines worked, or C, we just got lucky? I mean,
yeah, well, yeah. And I think you're hoping, like, let's back this up first off. We're all hoping that none of the players in the Phillies
yes,
test positive.
Exactly. Correct.
We're all hoping to see evidence that that is still something that's possible to go on here because we enjoyed having baseball back in the opening weekend, but we don't want to do it at risk of compromising a lot of the people that have expressed concerns about their health in all of this one. But what we can say is part of this has also been, all right, you have to be doing the safest thing possible. So that's period, end of sentence, like you said. Find out what part of your process did not get you those results. Daily testing seems like it's one of those. Even now, as we sit here every day and digest all this stuff and talk about all this stuff, I don't really feel like I have a great handle on when and how often Major League Baseball is testing. It's every other day, but we're getting tests back on different days and all this stuff. It seems like it's a hard thing to get a handle on, so you got to get a handle on that. And then you cannot have the optics of a player's group chat being the thing saying, yeah, we decided to play talking in a group chat together.
They should not be able to decide that.
Right, wrong, or indifferent. And if you're Major League Baseball, you can't afford that as an optic. Like we talked about that with the Lou Williams version of this. Yeah. I don't know if Zion went out to dinner, but I know I didn't see it. And the NBA has to reckon with the fact that you saw Lou Williams out at dinner somewhere in this. The MLB has got to reckon with the fact that you saw, and this has been out in the media, that these players decided that. Cannot afford that. You've got to at least give the appearance, if not, God willing, actually have a better handle on this. You can't have it looking like a group chat that's usually out there. So like I was in a group chat last night that was waxing poetic about the, you know, benefits analysis of flan as a dessert. Like that should not be the same environment that is deciding whether or not you're going to play a baseball game.
Well, that was an odd comparison, but I guess I understand your point.
The group text thing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Flan
sure.
is also very controversial. Weird texture for a lot of people.
Flan is wonderful. Flan is wonderful. Meanwhile, what is also interesting is that yet another Patriot has decided to opt out. Now, according to our Mike Reese, who does a great job covering the Pats for us for NFL Nation, Patriots running back Brandon Bolden is now planning to opt out for the 2020 season. So again, that's five
Patriots
at this point. It's Dante Hightower, by far the biggest name, with an $8 million salary. He's willing to give up 7.85 of because he makes $150,000 because
right.
he doesn't have a pre-existing condition. Offensive tackle Marcus Cannon, who's going to make $350,000 because he's a cancer survivor.
Right.
Bolden, fullback Danny Vitale, and center guard Najee Turan. So that's five members of the Patriots in the first couple of days that have decided to opt out of this.
It's Tuesday.
Yeah.
And again, like, Mike mentioned it before, but when the deal was agreed to on Monday, you have a week period. So we have till next Monday for players to decide if they want to opt out or not. It will be interesting because you do have the opt-out time if any baseball players are kind of reconsidering now. And after this outbreak with the Marlins and what's going on, if there are some guys that would maybe like to opt out now. And I wonder what if it's just you can't, like in the NFL. Like next Monday comes and goes, and after that there's an outbreak or something bad happens and players want to opt out. If you just know you can't, you're getting nothing if you do that, or what would happen?
That was a situation I thought about because you look in, I compared it to college athletics where you see a coach has some sort of, you know, punishment levied against them for something that these athletes could have never controlled. And a lot of times they're allowed to transfer without penalty if there's sanctions on the program that they weren't a part of and all that. You wondered if this situation, if something arising like this, and maybe Rob Manfred and Major League Baseball saying, we foresaw something like this happen. Unfortunately, we had this built into our plans, and a lot of this prevents you because on the professional level, you have collectively bargained this from saying, right. Well, now we want to, you know, we want to go back on this now because you had a voice in this in theory. You as the player side had a voice in the way that this was going to transpire. So I thought the same thing, but I'd imagine it's going to be pretty difficult.
So back to the baseball thing, Rob Manfred said he did not consider this a nightmare scenario.
Yeah.
You guys think this is a nightmare scenario yet?
For who?
For baseball.
I think it's, well, it's you brought it up with Buster. I brought it up with Jeff Passan yesterday. I think we're looking at it through a different lens because it's the Marlins, right? Let's just be honest about that.
I don't know, man. Yesterday felt pretty severe regardless of the name on the team's uniform. I get it probably would have been upgraded, but we were all pretty rattled.
We were. But would you have felt differently if it was the Dodgers?
I think there would have been a lot more intense talk if it was the Dodgers Yankees. Yes, I agree with
that. Because we're talking about competitive disadvantage. The Marlins have been competitively disadvantaged for a decade.
So that's all of us. I wonder players inside the game. Like, I wonder the trepidation in the Phillies clubhouse.
No question.
For these tests to come back.
Well, and part of the trepidation on the player side has to be eliminated. And we heard this from Buster. You have to hear from leadership a lot more in that. The one way you know, try and calm some of these nerves is by dispensing information to guys and having that come from places of leadership that people trust. Tony Clark on the Players Association side, like, those people need to be the ones all hands on deck. One of the most encouraging things we heard with the WNBA bubble, and there were some problems initially and they haven't been to this extent, was Kathy Engelberg, the WNBA commissioner, was out there helping right away, saying, what can I do, and trying to patch things up on that. Players see that, and Dad, you know this, if you're in a locker room and you see the head coach is willing to be accountable to the rest of the team, you go, all right, well, I'm more willing to put my hand in the pile now because I see that as the example set. So I think that's the part here is, in every situation during the pandemic, leadership has been something called into question, right? We look at each situation and say, pay attention to who's at the front of the line for you right now, because you're going to learn a lot. And that's not necessarily fair, but as we always say, fair's a place you judge pigs. Everyone's put in a place and a time in this where they've got to respond to the situation as best they can, and we're going to see who sinks or swims.
So now we sit and wait, as we know, as far as the Marlins and the Orioles not going to play. Today.
Waiting on the test results from the Phillies.
Baltimore actually flew back home, out of Miami and flew back home. And then we're waiting on the Phillies to see where we go from here and to see how careful everybody is going to be at this point.
And again, the biggest thing is what you just said. They flew. They flew home. That's the thing that baseball is doing. And even when the NFL gets going, they'll be doing that once a week. Major League Baseball is flying multiple times to multiple cities every week. That is the one outlier in all of this. That is certainly not the case in any of the bubble scenarios, whether it's the WNBA, the MLS, or the NBA, where, again, the season is set to resume in just a couple of days. So for more on how close we are to getting the NBA's end of the regular season back, delighted to be joined now by Adrian Wojnarowski, our fine NBA insider and the host of the Woj Pod. Woj, good morning. Thanks for being with us. So give us a sense of where the NBA feels right now as they've sort of the process here. They're playing the games to get ready for the resumption of the regular season. And dare we say it, knock on wood, so far everything has gone pretty much according to plan.
Yeah, maybe even better than they hoped. Not just from a testing perspective, guys, and you know, the fact that they've not had a positive test to come out of the bubble yet, they don't know that they'll throw a shutout here in Orlando. And I think they've, you know, despite getting off to a good start, it remains, you know, a very vigilant environment. But I think even more so from a mental standpoint, and you know, so much uncertainty coming into this about how players were going to react to the environment, organizations were going to react, and that the players have really been bought in, invested. No significant injuries yet, and I think people worried about coming back from such a long layoff and shortened training camps. Would you see a rash of injuries? That hasn't happened yet. So I think so far, you know, with the restart of the seeding games within, you know, 48 hours now, they couldn't have asked for more out of how this has begun, but there's still a long way to go until mid-October when they would crown a champion.
But their runway is, we keep using that analogy, has been very, very smooth as they've been going down it. Woj, to kind of put a ribbon on this, we were discussing the difference of Lou Williams and his 10-day quarantine as opposed to Zion Williamson and his 4-day quarantine. Both were out of the bubble. Both got tested every day. Both were negative in their test. Yet Lou, with the picture because he was out to dinner, gets a 10-day quarantine. Did it to you, because I know to some it felt like it was a punishment as much as it was, well, we're going to quarantine you because you were out in a public area.
It was both. It was, it is a form of punishment to get the 10-day quarantine based on the fact, you know, that he was at a gentleman's club, even if he was just there to eat. I think the NBA believed that the optics were not good, and it was just not, I think the message, not just externally they want to send about how seriously they're taking this, but internally with others. And you know, there are going to be players who come and go out of this bubble between now and the end of the season. You know, Gordon Hayward plans to leave sometime in September for the birth of a child. And, you know, that's going to be right in the middle of the playoffs. And, you know, they're going, you know, they're going to essentially with the quarantines, you know, base it upon how long you were out for, the testing, who you were exposed to outside the bubble. But I think for Lou Williams, no question, there was a level of punishment there. And I do think the one thing you found, and they knew this going in, there were a lot, just as many players, who bristled at the idea of how limiting this environment were. You know, there's even more who want it protected and who want to know that they're going to be safe, that the virus doesn't get in here and threaten the safety and the viability of continuing this season.
Talking to Adrian Wojnarowski with us, our ESPN NBA insider. And Woj, the other comparison there was to Zion Williamson, who also returns to the bubble, has that 4-day quarantine. But where are the Pelicans at with the way they're going to roll him back into actual game action, since we know they've been so cautious with him really every step of the way in his rookie season?
Yeah, for anybody to be out as long as he was, to be out, you know, over a week and not being able to participate in workouts, you're going to ramp the guy back up carefully. And I think there's still a question of whether he plays or not in the Pelicans opener on Thursday. It is possible, but I still think they're working through that idea. I don't expect he sits very long in this restart. If he doesn't play Thursday, I think you'd expect to see him, you know, shortly thereafter. It is a very short runway for the Pelicans if they're going to make a run and get in a play-in game and be able to play Memphis. They've got a Portland team, you know, Sacramento, the Spurs, who are all Phoenix, who are all competing for an opportunity to steal that eighth seed in a play-in. And so, you know, I think Zion was in very good condition throughout the hiatus. He had come back in great shape. I think people saw that. And I think the hope is that they'll get him back on the court here sooner than later.
And then, of course, there's a team that's not in the bubble, Woj, that is making news, and that's the Knicks. They're finalizing that deal to make Tom Thibodeau their next head coach. You know, we had some people on yesterday talking about this, the idea of finally trying to get someone, a star, to want to come and play for the New York Knicks. The idea of World Wide West and Tom Thibodeau there, how attractive does that make, in your opinion, and on what you're hearing about team players that might want to actually be a part of the Knicks organization now?
Yeah, I think, you know, Leon Rose, the new president, William Wesley, and now Tom Thibodeau, there's a lot of history there. There's a strong relationship, and that's been absent in some other partnerships in New York. I use the word partnership loosely. There have been, it's been a revolving door among coaches in New York. I mean, they have been through, I think, over a dozen since Jeff Van Gundy left. And so I think for the Knicks, what they need Tom Thibodeau to do here in the short term, before you talk about going to get a star in free agency, you have to have an infrastructure of talent and building up role players and starters. You know, superstars don't walk into empty cupboards. They don't walk into places where there aren't the pieces in place where you plug me in and we can go right at it and start winning. Brooklyn was able to do that. The Los Angeles Clippers were able to do that by getting LeBron James in free agency and then Anthony Davis. They became more attractive for him to want to be traded there. And the Knicks have a long way to go to replenish and develop their talent base. They have draft picks from the Kristaps Porzingis trade, additional picks that they have. But I think for Tom Thibodeau, before we can talk about big free agents, I think you're going to need to see him start to build an infrastructure. And that's just something the Knicks haven't been able to do. And Tom Thibodeau is a program builder. And I think in terms of creating an environment where players can get better and he can maximize the players he has. You know, listen, the president coach role in Minnesota did not work largely because, you know, Jimmy Butler wanted out. And once Jimmy Butler wanted that trade, I think the things fell apart for them there. But I think in New York where he's sharing those front off, he's sharing, I think, the player personnel responsibilities with management might be a better structure for Tom Thibodeau. And but they've got a long way to go, I think, before we talk about star free agents wanting to sign with the Knicks. I think there's just a lot of infrastructure work that's going to have to be done first.
Yeah, and they're still waiting for the first one of those to actually come through. Yeah. Woj, as always, we appreciate the time. Thank you, sir.
Thanks, Woj.
Guys, thanks.
Golic and Wingo reminding you, don't forget to listen to ESPN Audio at Home via your smart speaker. ESPN Audio at Home brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Vans. Drive a Mercedes-Benz van and find out how far an extra mile really goes. From customization and service to financial assistance, Mercedes-Benz vans are ready for
anything. You know what's interesting to think about, Mike, from the aspect of getting ready to play? Sorry, Trey, but as far as training and playing, and then all of a sudden you're 10 days isolated. For like Lou Williams, like, and they isolate him there, like in a room. So imagine we're doing all the training we're doing. We go to camp and then you're isolated for 10 days where you can do nothing. I mean, you wonder what that does to you as far as how in shape. Because right now, I mean, you're looking at, if he's a couple days in and has 10 days, you're looking at 3 or 4 games into the regular season. Part of this, not much of is going to affect them too much, but then getting kind of back in to the swing of things.
And what you're allowed to do when it's a positive test and not the initial isolation. So a lot to weigh in those that are going to affect the way basketball gets played pretty soon.
And again, resumption of the season coming up this weekend. All right, we've talked a lot this morning about certain players opting out of playing in the NFL. Up next, the story of one player who did everything within his power to make sure he had the ability to opt in. We'll get to that next. Golic and Wingo, ESPN Radio, ESPN2. Golic and Wingo with you. Glad you're with us. ESPN Radio, ESPN2, presented by Progressive Insurance. All phone guests, including our next guest, join us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line, and that's ESPN injury expert Stefania Bell. Stefania, one of the great stories that we have seen in recent memory involving sports has been the unbelievable turmoil and comeback by Alex Smith, the quarterback whose leg was shattered a couple of seasons ago. And the news came just the other day that he has been cleared for all football activities. You chronicled his fight to not only play, but survive and keep his leg through that incredible E60 piece you did. It was absolutely phenomenal. It's such a heartwarming story in a time where we need more heartwarming stories in sports. The fact that Alex Smith has been cleared for all football activities. It's truly remarkable.
It is. You know, I feel like I've just been so fortunate to be along for the ride. I spoke with Alex last Friday, and he relayed the news to me that he had met with his surgical team, which included two trauma surgeons, a plastic surgeon, the head team physician, Dr. Robin West, and then also Colonel Joe Alderetti, the physician who leads the Center for the Intrepid. And as you guys may recall, we were down in San Antonio because Alex and his team in Washington consulted with the military, given that his injury was so similar to other military injuries. And it was really important to him to have that sign-off from Joe Alderetti because he's really the only person who's seen an injury like that and had to return an athlete, if you will. Our elite servicemen and women are certainly among the best athletes, but he's returned them to combat. So he has a real sense of how, after somebody goes through something like this, has these multiple surgeries, has a rod put in their leg, what kind of physical activity can they return to? So as a collective group, they felt that Alex's bone had healed enough that he was clear to do whatever he wanted in life.
So, and he wants to, it seems, go back and play. He is on Washington's PUP list, physically unable to perform list. He can't do any activities on the field while he's on that list. Listen, Stefania, you've seen this injury. You know what he went through. While we all kind of hope for him but are a little kind of queasy in the background going, oh, man, should he do this? What are the safety possible hazards of him going back? Or do you say, hey, go play, man. You're good to go.
Well, I think it's interesting, right, that he's on the PUP list because he's been cleared. So, you know, I understand everyone's apprehension, and certainly I would feel it too. And I believe that Alex probably has some. I mean, there are certain mental hurdles that he knows he needs to get past, and he's just moving through them one day at a time. But I think the only way you find out what you can do, and Alex has certainly expressed it this way, is to get back out on the field and try to do those things. I mean, he said as much. He's like, I don't know if I'll ever be able to do what I need to do as a quarterback. You know, can I escape the pass rush? I don't know that yet. But the way you progress from doing all the things we saw him doing when we ended our piece and he was in Hawaii training individually is you have to then take that next step. And I think that's what Alex wants more than anything, is just a legitimate chance to see how far he can take this. I also spoke with Elizabeth, his wife, and of course, you know, she went through a lot herself, and it's not a decision that's made easily. But again, she said Alex is wired differently. He's a competitor, and it's really important to him to see just how far he can go.
Stefania Bell with us, our ESPN NFL injury expert. And Stefania, I want to see Alex take the next step. We want to see all sports be able to take the next step in this process now. And I'm curious for you, as you've sat back and watched what's transpired with the Marlins in Major League Baseball over the last couple of days, when you look at it from the NFL's point of view, as they get ready to go here, what for you is the most important factor for them if the NFL wants to try and get off the ground successfully here?
Well, I've said this for every league that I've talked about, and I've certainly looked at the protocols, and every league has their own challenges, but individual responsibility comes to mind. Look, we know that this virus is highly contagious. There's things we're learning about it every day. That's why they call it novel and emerging. I spoke with Dr. Tom Mayer, the medical director for the NFLPA, and he said those two words are critical. We learn things about it daily, and we have to adapt. But once these protocols are in place, because they're not in a bubble, they're going to be going home. They have to interact with other people just as a part of daily living. I mean, training camps, for the most part, have players staying with their families. So individual responsibility, doing as much as you can to protect yourself and others, is really a critical aspect of them being able to move forward.
Don't worry about the dog. That's okay. All love the dogs.
Sorry
here.
About
we have
that.
Dogs on set.
Not a thing.
It's the door.
It is not a thing, Stefania, for us. Don't worry about that at all. So with all that in mind, this is the dichotomy for the NFL, right, Stefania? Hey, be as responsible as you can when you're away from the facility. When we're in the facility, we're going to sit here. We're going to be behind this. We're going to do this. But at the end of the day, they're going to run into each other a bunch. I mean, that's sort of the weird part about this NFL. We can do all this kind of stuff, but at the end of the day, the game we're trying to play, we can't do any of that.
And I think that's why it was so important to the NFLPA to have daily testing, because one of the things is early identification. You find out that somebody tests positive and you want them isolated, removed from their group, if you will, as quickly as possible. And you saw that they did get to that daily testing agreement, at least for the first couple of weeks. And then depending on the percentage of positive tests, they'll determine how far they carry that out. So, you know, the other thing that hasn't really been talked about is in the course of this virus, there appears to be that there are individuals who are super spreaders. And so their ability in terms of the amount of virus that they have and how quickly they can spread it is exponentially greater than the average person. And so it's really important to be able to identify anyone who tests positive quickly and extricate them. And, you know, I know that some people laugh, like, here we are, you know, if you're going to have contact, you're going to be breathing and spitting on each other, but then there's no jersey exchange or there's no handshakes at the end of the game. And the way it was explained to me is, look, you try and mitigate the risk wherever you can, knowing that there's contact is a part of football. So you just have to try and take the precautions everywhere else and minimize those exposures.
Stefania, the NFLPA especially tried to do and help mitigate that risk from the injury standpoint with the ramp-up period that they fought so hard for. As you look at that, do you think that's going to be enough, or is your concern still pretty high that we're going to see a major uptick in injuries on the field?
Look at baseball. This is hard, right? It's hard to have, and baseball had a weird situation because they started spring training and stopped, and people got really thrown off their schedule. I think this was critical for the players and the Players Association to maintain this ramp up time. And remember, the agreement originally for what would be a safe plan was made between the league and the Players Association by a joint task force that looked at various factors and certainly looked at the injury data that the league has kept over the last number of years. And in training camp, typically what we see is a spike in injuries, especially lower extremity injuries, something the league has really been trying to target in the first 2 weeks of camp. Now imagine that you're bringing guys together who have been training individually to different degrees. No consistency because you're not together doing the same workouts. It was very important to them that there is an acclimation period, which is really strength and conditioning and very light work for multiple weeks before you get into an accelerated football-specific period, you know, much more intense practice, and then a padded practice period. So the way it was structured was really important from the player's standpoint in terms of trying to mitigate injury risk as best as possible.
And that's all we're doing is we're trying at this point, and we'll see how it plays out. And it's going to be great to see what goes forward with Alex Smith. Stefania, again, great job chronicling his story. And thanks for being with us this morning, and we'll see what happens. Thanks.
Thanks, guys. And I have to say, wishing Mike Golic the best. Congratulations on an amazing ride. And all of you guys, thanks for having me on the show so often and being so nice to me. That's what I appreciate the most. You guys, it's like an extended family.
Thanks, Stefania. Please appreciate it. And really enjoyed having you part of the show. We really did. You helped us out a lot. Thank you very much.
Yep, the feeling is mutual. Tell Rico we said hi.
Same.
Rico's her dog.
Yeah.
We
kind of figured
it out. I'm amazed with the Alex. Isn't it? I would love, as a former player, I'd love to see him out in the field playing, but man, there's part of me that's like so nervous if he got out there.
You already made it through. Why risk it is, I'm sure, what a lot of people are thinking.
But I guess, you know, if you're just wired that way, you're
wired. I agree, and I think a lot of us would be. A lot of us would say, I want to go back and prove that I could have played
again. And the hard part, you know, for him is getting to this point, and now he has the decision to do what he wants to do going forward. But again, if you haven't seen that E60 story,
it's incredible.
It was absolutely remarkable. Golic and Wingo is presented by Progressive Home Insurance. Get your quote at progressive.com today. Coming up, much more on the NFL players continuing to opt out and one NBA player who could cement his Hall of Fame career with a title. But is that realistic? We'll get to that after this.
Hashtag winning.
Hashtag Florida man.
Hashtag scam that the company's paying for us to play golf.
Hashtag summer solstice.
Are you kidding me? Yeah. I mean, seriously?
Hashtag sad. Hashtag bad emoji.
Hashtag let's bring back red.
Hashtag maybe the only player.
Hashtag not what you're looking for unless you're Kevin Van Valkenburg.
Hashtag what's wrong with Verlander.
Hashtag first and last is
who are you?
Hashtag trader motif.
Hashtag content.
Hashtag summer book.
Hashtag never give it up. Love it.
Hashtag not really because one of them was a Croatian own goal.
Stop that now.
Do you remember when you used to do that?
Yes, I remember when you used to laugh differently.
I know, lots changed.
That's the weirdest thing. Like, your laugh has changed dramatically over the last 3 years, which I don't understand that at all.
I'm a 30-year-old adult man now, Trey. I've grown up.
You were 27 and you laughed like Santa, and now you have this staccato like...
I was a lot fatter then.
That doesn't change how you laugh.
Well, you never know.
Yeah. Oh, dude.
Get out of here.
The amount of hammer on my vocal cords.
You never know how that's going to change over the years, right?
Different levels of hammer on there. As we've seen, Dad, when all the pictures have come back at you, pictures of you without your beard now are jarring. Even the ones from like before quarantine.
We even did the split screen yesterday at Golic and Wingo of me years ago and now, and they did it without the beard. I need one with the beard because the beard is a stain because the wife likes it.
Oh, dear God. Okay.
You know what else we like? The NBA is back.
Yes.
NBA is back starting their real games on July 30th, just in a couple of days. So what we've been doing is kind of giving everybody a refresher on what maybe your team or the teams that are down in the bubble have had to endure during this hiatus and now coming back. And let's get it going now with Royce Young, our NBA reporter, talking about the Oklahoma City Thunder.
Golic and Wingo, NBA status update. Oklahoma City Thunder.
This is Royce Young here. Last time we saw the Thunder, they were just seconds away from tipping off against the Utah Jazz in that game that the entire sports world, and really the country for that matter, came to a screeching halt with. But when the Thunder start back in Orlando, it begins with finally getting to play that game against the Jazz. Because OKC was actually one of the league's pleasant surprises this year behind the resurgence of Chris Paul becoming the point god again and actually becoming the clutch god. He was leading the league in clutch time points. Since Thanksgiving, the Thunder had the third best record in the league behind the Bucks and Lakers. They were 34-13. They played together. They played connected. They played tough. But the big question for them is going to be recapturing that chemistry. But outside of that, there's a belief inside the team they actually may come back stronger from this hiatus. There's a buzz around the development of Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, and there aren't any significant roster questions lingering around them. Dennis Schroeder will step away in a couple weeks from the bubble for the birth of a child, but he'll likely be back in time for the postseason. Most people see the West as two teams at the top and then everybody else. But if the Thunder can pick up where they left off, plus a little development from the budding young star, they might be near the top of that everybody else group.
So that's Oklahoma City in that tight group of 3, 4, 5, 6 in the West. Another team in that tight group is the Utah Jazz. And here's Kristen Kenny with their update.
Golic and Wingo, NBA status update. Status update. Utah Jazz.
Kristen Kenny here, sideline reporter for the Utah Jazz. March 11th, the NBA and the world shut down when Rudy Gobert tested positive for COVID-19 in Oklahoma City. Well, now the Jazz have a chance at the title, coming into the NBA restart with a 41-23 record and fourth in the West. The biggest challenge, they have to find a way without Bojan Bogdanović, who counted for 20 points a night. So who will make up for the scoring load? It's going to require a collective effort from their deep roster. Mike Conley still have a chance to pick up where he left off. He started to find his groove before the season halted. Then Joe Ingles, Jordan Clarkson, George Hayes, and of course, Donovan Mitchell and Rudy Gobert. They've shown no signs of tension during these scrimmages, and those two all-stars will need to be connected in their pick-and-roll game. If the Jazz can get a collective effort from all around, get out and push the pace and shoot early threes, then you'll be on the right path.
So that's Utah's at 4 right now, Oklahoma City at 5, a game from one another, and at 3 is Denver and 6 in Houston. They're all within 2.5 games of one another with 8 games to go. Again, not big for, there's no home court here, but just for who you would play in the first round of the playoffs.
And if you're wondering why did we put the Thunder and Jazz together, remember they were the two teams that played when Rudy Gobert tested positive and the whole thing was shut down to begin with.
They say they were getting ready in all this, yeah. So as we get ready to begin again, it's only right that they find their way back together. This time, thankfully, in more positive circumstances. Yeah. The NBA bubble appears to be a place right now that is chugging along at the place and according to plan and the way they'd set out.
The most amazing thing, it's working according to plan in a place that is still one of the hotbeds for COVID-19 with everything that is going
on.
Kudos
to them. I mean, we called it a mesh hat. Yeah. But it truly has been a bubble to how well, and give credit to the guidelines, the protocol in there, and to the players, most of the players, in following all those guidelines.
Knock on wood. Yeah. But so far, it is going well. Much more on the NBA's return, and as one team outside the bubble finally have a shot to land a star. We'll get to that next. Golic and Wingo with you. ESPN Radio, ESPN 2.